I don't know, most kids, they have their dreams of being celebrities or football players or anything. But for me, ever since I was a kid, my mum doesn't remember a time where I didn't say I wanted to be a chef.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Birmingham Food Podcast, Breaking Bread. I'm your co-host Liam, and opposite me is my co-host Carl. And
yes,
friend.
I am co-host.
Not just a co-host. He's my mate as well.
Been mates for a very long time.
Very long time. We're surprisingly old. We look a lot older than we look.
I don't think, like, I tell people I'm 40 soon and people are like, nah. I'm like, man, fat people don't age that bad. So fat fills out the gaps, man. What did I say? Fat don't grow.
Keeping all right, mate.
Yeah.
This is good because we genuinely haven't really seen each other for a little while. I was in Ireland and stuff, so.
Yeah, apart from Sunday.
Climbing a mountain, yeah. Apart from Sunday, yeah. We had Digbeth Dining Club in Shirley.
Yeah,
definitely not going to make the mistake of saying the only good thing that ever happened.
I know,
to
yeah, Jesus. With some more messages coming through. What are you on about?
yeah, that was a bit of a blunder on my part. But in fairness, there's not a lot.
There's not a massive amount of things, to be fair, but. I was like, you know what, I'm going to do a post about it soon, a proper post about Shirley, because I figured out there's 10 good things.
10 good things. Now you are a champion of Shirley, but I feel like you're ahead of the curve, kind of like you were about Birmingham when you were telling us for years that Birmingham was the place, and we were like, shut up, you're deaf.
Yeah,
it's not the place, man. Up until 2012, we were right, and then after 2012, you were right. You were just ahead of the curve.
You know what? It's just remembering when people say what's good in Shirley and you go, shaking hand. Like now I've like memorized 10 places now.
You should have an elevator pitch for Shirley. But yeah, irrelevant. Digbeth Dining Club coming to Shirley is still a big deal.
Oh, mate, it's even big wherever it goes. It's big, yeah, man. Like fucking unreal. So
for me,
good.
It's like you said before. It just shows that there is an appetite for wicked stuff in Shirley.
Well, it was rammed. It was absolutely rammed. And they were all 12. From Shirley, because you don't really need to travel because it tours. So like if you live in Bromsgrove, you haven't got to come to Shirley. There's even ones in Solihull. So if you live in the centre of Solihull, you haven't got to come to Shirley to go to it.
Yeah, so the chances are 90% of that crowd were definitely from Shirley.
Yeah. And it was busy, it was fun, it was a good atmosphere.
Greedies, man, kill it. They see the queue all day, there's a long queue.
There was queues at a few places, but nothing like the queue Greedies had. Like, I went straight, I got there early, went straight, same as you, straight to Greedies.
There was no queue
away.
When I got there, mate. I went there before the fries were on, it was brilliant.
I just got there, and I literally walked straight to the front, turned around once I finished ordering, and there was like 20 people behind me.
Because I planned it, I knew I was having Greedies. I was like, I'm having Greedies to start with, I'm going to have... Is it pronounced Brummy,
I think. Brummy. It would make sense if it was Brummy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the Vietnamese thing, it's class.
Yeah, you had that and you dropped some pork.
The pork belly, I was devastated. I mean, there was loads of pork in it, but like still, I dropped the pork.
You dropped one piece and I swear to God, it was like slow motion.
Yeah, mate, I was so angry, I dropped the pork. Could have been anything. Could have been a tomato or something, a bit of salt. It could have been anything. Not the pork.
Even I was gutted. I wasn't even eating it, but I was wounded looking at it happen.
It was one fantastic. I see them all the time and everyone raves about them and I feel bad because I never tried them. So I was like, I'm definitely trying them. I tried nearly everything else, so I'm having that. Yeah. And then Old Faithful Urban Cheesecake for dessert.
Yeah, I do love it. I've got to admit, I love them, but I only had the wings the whole time I was there. Like, I just wanted a big pile of wings, and luckily someone else went and got wings later.
So you caved in on them as
so
well.
So I just had a load of wings again, yeah.
Can't beat Greedies, man. Greedies are unreal.
I'm glad you're coming around to the wings, man.
I do feel like what's happened there, but I think strips are still better.
You got to embrace the wings, man. That's how it is.
But it's that sauce, that Thai sriracha sauce. I love that. Like the best barbecue sauce.
Yeah, their gravy's good.
Yeah, you let me try that.
Gravy's really good stuff.
Dippy dippy, that was wicked as well. So we might as well stick with Shirley. Coming up this Friday, so you listen to this, yeah?
On Thursday.
Thursday, the comedy's on the Thursday.
Comedy night Thursday, Shirley Beer Festival. Biggest beer festival in the Midlands this year.
Yeah, biggest charity one, I think.
Certainly, yeah, there's a big, big charity vibe to it.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
I can't name a brewery that's not going to be there, to be honest. Everyone I love's there. So, yeah, the Thursday night, you've got comedy. There's a stand-up comedy night. and then Friday and Saturday is the beer festival. And if you buy your ticket for the Friday or the Saturday, it gets you entry to the whole weekend.
The whole lot, yeah.
Apart from the comedy night, but there's a ticket you can get, and it's still cheap. That if you get the comedy and all weekend included,
it's like £40, I think, for all of them.
I don't even
them.
Think it was that, you know. I think it was cheaper.
It's £40.
That includes beer tickets. I said this to Siobhan, like, I said, oh, it's £25 a ticket. And she's like, what do you mean, £25? You still got to buy beer. I was like, yeah, but that's £20 of tokens that comes with it.
Yeah, so it's £40 for this comedy, but you get £20 beer tokens as well. So I thought, that's even better. And you can get in every day. So I was like, that's class, though. I was going to go, but we've got so much on, like, at the minute. It's mental.
Yeah, I'm going. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Yeah, just great day out for the whole family as well. Loads of family vibes going on.
Yeah, I think there's face painting, bouncy castle, loads of good street food is going to be there. Like, don't ask me who, though.
Gone. We'll keep banging the Shirley drum, hopefully.
I'll be there, man. I'm going for it. We have got stuff coming up, man. Crafty Cat, if that ever opens. We're looking forward to that. Yeah. There's something else opening in Bone that we can't talk about in Shirley, but
Sully
that's
Hill
a big
well.
One for us.
Only down the road is obviously Soho Tavern.
Soho Tavern, Hampton and Arden. Yeah. That opens, we're recording today. It opens today
to
the public.
We're big fans of the original one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it, to be honest.
Yeah, same as that one.
Photos look great as well. It's got like a rooftop. I can't imagine eating a mixed grill on a rooftop terrace looking out over.
It looks
a
bit posh, to be honest.
It does look posh, doesn't it?
Hopefully the mixed grills are still the same.
I've never looked at something before and gone, oh, it's posh. Like, it's not, it's an unusual like thing to look at and go, oh, it's a shame.
But so it's having the original. It's not really, it's not a shithole. Like, it's all right.
No. It's nice. It's nice. They're all nice.
Yeah.
I like pubs and you know it looks great. I'm gonna try it. I can't wait to try it. I'm excited for it. We've been waiting long enough.
Awesome, mate. So on to today's episode, where we've also been eating lately as well.
Oh yeah, we ate there, like, oh, it was great.
Yeah, we were chuffed. I remember when they said, oh, do you want to come try the food before you record the podcast? We're like, yes, we can.
Yeah, yes, please. And just what a place, like, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, oh, really, man. No, we didn't say name, so there it is. Oh, really? We always do that, you know. But it was class. I mean, you've seen the photo. Everyone's seen the photos, man. It's the most Instagrammable place in the world. It's like...
Yeah, but what a place. Like, the view's phenomenal. The woman that was serving us was really nice.
Yeah,
the,
she was
the
great.
The food was, like... The food Chris is sending out there, like, I was mega impressed.
Yes, I'm... And then we had big the portions, well, that's what I kept thinking. How big the portions
it's unusual to leave a really nice restaurant, like, proper full.
Stuffed, yeah. I had the terrain to start with, that pork terrain. That was delicious.
Yeah, I had a wicked steak tartare. I don't think I've ever not ordered steak tartare when it's been an option.
Double steak seems to be your thing.
Yo, if the steak's going to be good, get it, man.
Did you have steak for mine as well, yeah?
Yeah.
Good steak.
Yeah.
Feels like that kind of place where you should order steak.
I'd have beef with a side of beef, please.
I'm mad for lamb, though. If lamb's on the menu, I'm going to get lamb.
Your lamb did look good, yeah.
Yeah, nice, lamb was fantastic. We'll go into it in the episode, but it's talking about the little bonbon on the side, the shoulder, pork, lamb shoulder bonbon kind of thing. They're always the best bits, aren't they? Like the little bit on the side.
Yeah, they're it's amazing.
Class. Yeah, then desserts. Yeah, so we had an awesome meal, and then... came back a week later to record with Chris, head chef.
Yeah, this is a great pod. Like, I say this like, oh, yeah, this is a great podcast. I'm sure if you look at every episode, the intro, I go, oh, yeah, it's a great podcast. Like, it is.
But you know what? We were asked quite a lot on the run-up when we said we were going to record an episode with the head chef. Quite a lot of people said, oh, who's the head chef? You know, he's a little bit unknown. He's come from outside of Birmingham.
He's not unknown at all.
No, like, but then you look chef. At where he's been, and like when we were sitting talking to him, we were like, wow. So he went straight in there. he literally went in the deep end into fine dining when he started in the industry.
Yeah, like the places he's worked, like his CV stands up to anyone else's CV.
Yeah, very focused, like real focused. Even like listening back when I was doing the editing stuff, you can just hear his passion for food, focus. No, he's a chef, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's mad for the industry. Talks positively about the industry as well, like makes it sound exciting, somewhere like you should get more people to work in. I love that. Just an all-round good guy. Like.
Yeah, it was a good, really good to talk to him about it all.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed listening to him and seeing his passion and... As you said, he's focused. Like,
yeah, like a young fella as well, yeah, to get so far. Like, get so far, and you can understand why with the training he's had.
Oh, he's got places to go. Yeah, I think. Like, I think we'll be lucky to keep him in Birmingham, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm going to stop saying. Okay, I must address that. I will say, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm not about ladies and gentlemen. I'm about whatever the hell you want to be.
Yeah.
Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Chris.
Just want to start with that. That food last week was great. Really good stuff.
Yeah, fantastic.
Couldn't fault it anything. It was absolutely delicious.
That's what we want to hear.
I'm not just saying it. Like the lamb dish, that was just... It wouldn't look out of place on any of the best tasting menus around the city.
No, thank you.
Apart from being a little big for a tasting menu, but other than that.
I did read your comments. It was... It's our newest one to the menu. And originally we were doing it with lamb loin, which for me, I was finding it to be a little bit too small. Mm. And I almost felt like it was missing something. I think it needs a more hearty piece of meat, hence why we've gone on to using rump now. I think it's just, it helps sort of with it. We're using more humble ingredients. It's kind of where we're going to try and start to go with our cooking here. A little bit more humble ingredients, but then just do delicious food with that and really concentrate on the cooking. And, you know, it's all very well having like, you know, beef fillet, lamb loin, all these most incredible ingredients. Having all those are great. But for us, it's very much about like, we're chefs, we want to cook. So we take the sort of more humble ingredients and try to make beautiful food sort of out of that. So that's kind of where we're going, the direction of the restaurant.
There's an art to it almost as well, isn't there? Taking something humble and making it amazing.
I think that's where I want to kind of go with food for me now is, you know, using all those super high-end ingredients are great, you know, and every chef wants to cook with them, you know, and I've loved cooking with them my whole career, you know, working with Jason. It was nothing short of the best, you know. We wouldn't use any of the sort of lesser cuts. It was very much at Pollen Street, it was prime. Everything had to be prime. Everything had to be the best, which was great. And it's lovely to cook like that. And it's lovely to be able to see those ingredients, use those ingredients. But then also, there's so many other ingredients that are equally as good, just maybe need a little bit more love and attention into them to make them shine like the rest. Mm. I think that's kind of where I want to see what we can do here with that.
Was it shoulder lamb that was on your
little... Yeah, so it's a braised shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's my favourite bit. And most tasting menus will have like loin of pork or something, but then there'll be like a bit of cheek on the side with a little crumb around it. And that's always my favourite bit.
It's the bit that takes the most time. And it's the bit that needs the most attention. And I think if you get that little bit right, like you say, it can be the best part of the dish. And it really feels... like the love's gone into that and that really like the attention to detail has just gone into that. So that's actually where I just shot off a minute ago. That's what I was doing. I was just rolling the lamb to make sure we have it,
nice.
You know, season it, taste it, and then show the guys exactly how, you know, the size that we need to have it. And, you know, it's still a little bit of precision in it, but it's very much just about, it's got to taste absolutely delicious.
It's so funny though, because that would have been classed as well, like, unfashionable maybe 20 years ago.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, 20 years ago, people would be like, why are you using that?
It's going in the bin.
Now, That's the best part.
Yeah. Shoulder for me, especially on lamb, I'm all about both of them.
We started here with lamb neck. Now we've got on to using shoulder. Just really, really incredible ingredients that I think more chefs are going towards now as well. I think a lot of chefs are going that direction. I think with the price of everything going up as well, everything being extremely expensive, we need to learn to cook a little bit more with those humble ingredients. You know, when we first got here and we opened the restaurant, of course, you're opening a restaurant, you got to have the best of everything. You've got turbot, you've got beef fillet, you've got all these really, really prime, incredible things. But then, you know, we've opened the restaurant now, like, let's show what we can actually cook. You know, let's really take all those ingredients, you know. And also, day and age, we've got to make a margin, right? We've got to meet our targets, because, you know, otherwise the restaurant's not going to survive. So.
Oh, that's every restaurant. It's a pain in the ass for everyone.
It's tough
now, isn't
right
it?
Now
it's only getting tougher, and it's set to get even worse, to be honest.
I mean, we're seeing it at the moment. It is a very, very tricky environment, looking at what we can get, because obviously we still want to use the best, we still use the best suppliers, you know, we have the most incredible guys around us, but it really is so important that, you know, we understand what's going on in the current climate, and right now it's tough. Yeah. It's a real struggle for us.
We'll get back to kind of displacing suppliers and stuff in a little, but we like to start by going right back. I read somewhere that you said you wanted to be a chef. You knew you wanted to be a chef from the age of five.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Most kids, they have their dreams of being celebrities or football players or anything. But for me, ever since I was a kid, my mum doesn't remember a time where I didn't say I wanted to be a chef. And she never knew where it came from. My mum doesn't cook. She tries a bit more now she's retired. But when I was a kid, it was fish fingers and chips. And like that was it, straight out of the freezer. Mum never had the time to cook. So, and my mum hates cooking. She likes eating good food, but she hates cooking. Like,
was she a good cook? I mean, I don't want to
now,
kill you like.
But now, she's...
When you were little, was she
good cook? No. And she won't even mind me saying that. She really won't. If she ever listens to this, she'll understand why I said it. Because when I was younger, my mum was an awful cook.
Do you think that maybe made you want to cook my own good food then?
I don't know, maybe. I think everybody says that their grandparents have an influence in food. And I think food is a lot more loved sort of back in that generation. So I think my grandma did have, both of them, I suppose, did kind of have a little bit of an influence in the sense of my mum's mum was a baker, not by trade, just like a home baker. She did a little bit. She did cakes for like celebration cakes for friends and family and stuff. And that was honestly the best part of her birthday as a kid, knowing that my nan was going to make a cake.
Yeah,
and
she would say to me, like my childhood,
what do you want on your cake? And it could be anything. When I was growing up as a kid, like comic books, I was like, Spider-Man, Thomas the Tank Engine, all these things when I was a kid. And that was what she'd make. And every time it'd be amazing. So it's like the best part for a birthday was birthday morning, going around nan's house to pick up the cake and then not being able to wait to cut and eat it because it's too late before she can box it up. I've already took a slice. So that was very much a big part. And then I suppose dad's mum was, she's very sociable. She liked dinner parties, you know, and it was just family dinner parties, but everybody would get dressed up and nan would cook everything she wanted. It was food that I never had at home. So when I knew nan was doing it was the best thing in the world. And, you know, it was maybe a 15-minute walk away from my house to my grandma's house. I was gone when I knew it was happening. You know, even as a kid, I'm like, right, I'll see you at nan's. I'm around there. Just getting in the way. I'm definitely not helping, but I'm eating everything. I'm getting in the way. I'm tasting everything. And it's just, I don't know. I think that's my early sort of connection with food is kind of like, you know, sitting on the side while nan's making a red wine sauce or something. And the only sauce I know is Bisto. So when nan makes a red wine sauce, it's the best thing in the world, you know? So that kind of started it, I suppose, for me. And I think they, between the two of them, pretty much sparked it off for me. And then ever since after that, it was, I'm going to be a chef. And
it never wavered. It was the whole time.
Nothing ever changed.
Definitely a chef.
No, there was nothing in my my upbringing that ever made me sway away from that. As you know, you go to school, you're at secondary school and you've got the careers advice officers asking you what you're going to do. And at any time for them, like, I'm going to be a chef. That's it. Oh, well, how are you going to do that? Doesn't matter. I'll figure it out. I know I want to cook and I care about what I'm going to do. So I'll follow where I want to go, really. And then, you know, went to culinary school. It was a waste of time, if I'm really honest. But, you know, I went there. It was a sociable part. It introduced me to cooking, you know, and sort of the basics, which was great.
Yeah.
And then just finding restaurants sort of throughout the time at culinary school, doing a few competitions and all that sort of stuff.
You're working in kitchens as...
As soon as I got into culinary school, I found my first job in a kitchen. It was a small pub close to where I grew up. Everything was microwaved. Everything was awful. But at the time, I didn't know any better. So it was very much just like, I guess this is what cooking's all about.
Did it feel right?
No, it didn't. It was very... And it was a tough time to... Is this really all cooking's all about? You know, and I knew it wasn't. I knew there was definitely a lot more to it. But I was kind of restricted in what I could do. Couldn't drive because I was only 16. I was still at school. So it was very much like the plan was, as soon as I passed my driving test, finish culinary school, go straight to London. So it was leave, go and properly learn how to cook. But for the time being, I tried to find the best restaurants around home. I ended up leaving, working at a small pub called the Wheat Sheaf in Coombe Hay, which was, it was a rising star. And my first day there was a bank holiday. And I've never... been so in the shit in my entire life. The chef gave me no breathing room. Like, the food was proper cooking and, like, you know, very hearty cooking, but also, like, great ingredients. You know, I'm cooking quail for the first time. I'm cooking all that. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, this is what cooking's all about. This is it. In the shit, going down, not knowing what's going on. First day of the thing, chef's threatening to throw pans at me for not putting stuff up on time. And I'm thinking to myself, like, yes, now I'm in a kitchen. And going home that day, I went straight to my girlfriend at the time's house. And I just remember saying to myself, like, yes, this is it. I found somewhere now. And I ended up doing 2 years while I was finishing culinary school, working every single night at that restaurant and then all weekend at that restaurant, to the point that when I left there, I was a junior sous. But, you know, a junior sous in a small pub in Bath. So I finished culinary school. Now it's time to properly go and learn to cook. And that was where the water side came into it for me. It was, if you're going to go, you're going to go for a high place, you're going to go straight to a 3-star.
Peak a bit early.
So I did a few trials in London whilst finishing up my time at culinary school. So I went to Sketch, was one of them. I went to the Fat Duck, was one of them. And then finally I went to the Waterside. And I remember Michel Roux walking into the kitchen on my first day and telling me to cook an omelette. And it sounds like everything you ever heard on a TV show, but it was, walks in, come here, boy. I'm like, yeah, chef. It's like, cook me an omelette. That's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But yeah, you know, cook the omelette. Remember something from culinary school, because, you know, they teach you how to cook a proper French omelette. Finally did that and then got offered the job and went there 2 days later. So, you know, that was pretty much what it was all about. Was, I want to learn how to properly cook and go to the most prestigious French restaurant in the UK to learn how to cook.
It had 3 stars since the 80s or 7 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's had 3 stars for over 40 years now.
Yeah.
I was there on their 30th year anniversary of having their 3rd star.
Wow.
And that was just a massive street party. It was amazing.
Can you imagine?
Do you feel a pressure to kind of uphold that history?
I don't think so. I think the industry's changing. Everything's evolving so quickly within the food trends. And, you know, that place will, I think, forever hold its 3rd star. I don't think there's any way you can take it away. It's so institutionalized that the food there is always so consistent. It's always perfect. It's always. And I think that from an early age was something I really needed to learn, that nothing but the best leaves the kitchen. And first 2 weeks, my dad forever brings this up to me, but first 2 weeks of the wars, I went home and cried every night because I felt so far out of my depth. I just said to my dad, like, I don't know how I can do this. And every night I called him at 1 a.m. crying down the phone. And then I ended up there for 3.5 years. So
how did you not just quit? Like, was you just not like, oh, fuck this, I'm done?
That definitely was because both of my grandmothers. So when I moved to the Waterside, one of my grandmothers passed away just as I was about to leave. And that was tough. It was always her dream of me being a chef working in some of the best restaurants. It was always her. And then the other one got very sick as well. She's, you know, suffered with Alzheimer's. So I think both of those, you know, they always used to tell me, and it's tattooed on my arm. It says, never give up. And that was the last words my grandma said to me before she passed away. So I don't know. I had that tattooed on me literally just before I moved to London. And I think that kind of probably got me through that first month. I think the first month was probably the hardest. Mm. Just very much completely different environment, sort of. Nothing but perfection, just learning so much. I think trying to learn it all so fast was what just kind of overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of tough, but they definitely got me through it. You know, you got to keep going. You got to keep going. It's going to get easier. It's going to get easier. And the pep talks from my dad every night of just being like, nothing's going to stop you. Just keep going. Just keep going. And then, you know, I guess it paid off in the end for 3.5 years. There was
Was there a day where you just finished a shift and you were like, actually, I nailed that shift. That's good. I'm sort of getting this now.
I think it was the day I was there a month. And the first month I was there, you're on the herb section. You're that guy. You do the herbs for every section. You chop the chives, you pick the chervil, you make sure the pass is set up. You do all the kind of like odd jobs and you're kind of a little bit of the bitch of the kitchen, I suppose. And the longer you stay on that section, you know, it goes to show sort of like what you're really made of. And 3rd or 4th week it was, Chef Alain came to me and said, you know, I see you've done pastry diplomas and stuff like that. And nobody got to go on pastry at the Waterside. Nobody. it was very, very rare that a young English kid would go over onto the pastry. So when he offered me that, I was like, put me over there. Great. So I think once I'd done that and I kind of went home, I thought to myself, you know what, actually, I'm obviously doing something right because they've moved me pretty quickly. And now I'm straight onto pastry. So started learning pastry, didn't speak a word of French. Every pastry chef in the kitchen's French. I have no idea what's going on. But then I think I'm having the best time now. I'm learning now and I'm really, you know, I progressed through pastry, ended up running the bakery, ended up doing all these bits and pieces for the kitchen and then working your way all around that, you know, kitchen, knowing every section, just, I don't know, just every day was something new. And I think that was what just kept me going through the war side. It was just, even though the menus change every four seasons and they're the same every single year, you're never on the same section during that time of the year. So
yeah,
it's always something new. So it was very much a lot of that and kind of just getting promoted, taking my family to the restaurant to celebrate the promotion, all those bits and pieces. It was kind of, it was special at the time. And it was, you know, taking my family there was amazing. You know, they didn't know what they were eating. My mom didn't know what I was. My dad didn't know what sea urchins were. They didn't know any of that, but they got to sit and experience it. And I felt super proud then, you know, like, I work here, this is what I do. And my mom and dad are just overwhelmed with pride at that moment as well. Yeah, not the fact that we had too many bottles of wine, we didn't know what was going on.
Is that something the business does? Did they invite you in on your promotion or you just done that on your own back?
I never really seen it happen much, but Chef Alain just said to me when I got my promotion, he was just like, you know, invite your family. I think he seen it was quite hard for me when I first got there and I was really struggling with the sort of like trying to keep up with the whole mentality. I used to working in pubs, you know, good pubs, but that's what I was used to. And then you go to this big restaurant and, you know, he really looked after me. You know, it was really tough to move on from that place. And you could see that it was, you know, he tried to keep me. Threw everything at me to keep me, but it was, you know, it was time to move on. So
it was a lovely touch though, isn't it, to do that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to invite your whole family up, you go into a 3-star, you get so well looked after. My parents have never been to a restaurant with a Michelin star. They didn't know what they were walking into. So to see them completely blown away, I thought, you know, actually, I've landed on my feet here. I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just kind of from there. It's just keep going, just keep going. And obviously it got easier. You know, you begin to know everybody in the kitchen, you know, you get involved with the kitchen banter a little bit more. You know, at first you're just the quiet kid in the corner, just like trying to stay out of the way so you don't get beaten up by anybody. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, that was a good moment.
Why leave when you were at such an amazing restaurant? What's the desire to move on from?
Self-progression. Yeah. You know, I'd been around all the sections. I had a great time. And then once you've kind of done all those sections, it's kind of like, okay, now it is just the menu changes. I know wrong, the food's perfect every time and it's fantastic. And it's fantastic. It's brilliant to be a part of, but then there comes a time where it's, you've got to go and do something different then, you know? And I had a couple of offers come my way. So kind of weighed up my odds and decided to go on, to which Chef Alain definitely advised me against. He was like, don't just, A little bit longer. But I chose to do it anyway. And, you know, maybe I should have listened to him, but I don't know. It's
worked out all right in the end. So.
So far, I think.
So yeah.
We'll see.
What did you go on to do after that?
So I went to open Clifton House with Andre Garrett. And that was tough. That was taking over a very old hotel. I'd never worked in hotels. So I really didn't know what we were going into. A very old kitchen, it was falling apart. Obviously, they've had a renovation since then.
Did it have its own team already there, or did you take team with you?
No, there was his own team already. Andre took me and two other guys, which I guess he knew from somewhere else. But it was all kind of a very new team. And then the old team that was there, a couple of them stayed on, and a couple of them moved on with the chef that was going from there, who went on to, I think, Maze in London. So he kind of moved on, took a few of his team with him. And then we obviously brought a few more in ourselves, kind of started to build the restaurant. But that was a tough opening, you know, with the kitchen falling apart.
And, it must be hard to go from like such a well-oiled 3-star machine and then go to something new and starting like that.
Yeah, 100%. You go into you walk into the waterside kitchen, it's immaculate. Everywhere's so organized. There's never any issues. Like the issues I face here and the issues I think I faced over my career of being a head chef and running establishments, there's always something going on that you're trying to sort out, but I never seen any of that at Waterside. Maybe it was because it was all just so well under control, or they just really, really good at hiding it. But yeah, you would have never thought anything ever went wrong at that place. There was never any phone calls to suppliers, you know, like there was never anything. I didn't see any of it. It was just very much just like, you get to work, everything you need is there, everything's fantastic. You cook all your food, everybody loves it. And then you go home, and it was going in into Clifton, you know, you're struggling with suppliers, you know, your stove's not working, the kitchen floor's come up. All these things that we walked into was very, you know, challenging. And I was only 20 when I went there, so I was still young when I got there. And, you know, Andre put a lot of pressure on me, which was nice. You know, he didn't really have a right hand at the time, and I didn't want a junior suit role. I just wanted to go in there as a senior CDP and just kind of cook and help put the menus together and just kind of enjoy it as we were doing it. But because there was no other senior, it was very much kind of like I took on top of all the ordering and trying to control GPs, which I had no idea what I was doing. Whether I've got that down yet, I still don't know. but it was a lot of pressure through that, and a very eye-opening experience on that one.
I imagine you learned a lot as well, though, through that.
I mean, Andre put a lot of responsibility on me, and obviously, if I could, you know, talk to him about it now, I'd probably thank him for all of that, because he really did, in the nicest way of saying it, dumped a lot of stuff on me, which I kind of just had no experience in managing it, but just had to figure it out. So it was kind of a lot of pressure, but also quite exciting to think that, you know, you got all this responsibility on you, but then when you go home and you can't sleep because you're thinking, shit, did I order milk? Or like all those things. It's like they're small things, but just those extra responsibilities are really small things in a lot of people's minds. But in my mind, it was what kept me up at night. And I never slept at Clifton. I slept in a staff room most of the time.
Wow.
So yeah, that was interesting. And then, yeah, I did just over a year, I think, there. And then I had to leave for a few health issues.
Lack of sleep.
That was definitely, yeah, I think, what caused most of the health issues. But there was a few things that I had going on, which I kind of, you know, I have.
You're doing well to stick it for a year by the sounds of it.
I mean, I was doing, I think my longest stretch I did was something like 28 or 29 days straight.
Wow.
Basically, it was our pastry chef had a young kid, wanted to spend more time with his kid, 2 days before Christmas, packed his stuff and left. Took his entire pastry team with him. And the pastry section within that place was huge with the afternoon tea, desserts, functions, room amenities, everything. And Andre just went, well, you've done pastry at a Waterside, so can you do it? And I was like, yeah, sure, it'd be fun. I was wrong. It was not fun, because the day I walked into a pastry kitchen, there was no pastry chefs left. All of them had gone with the previous chef. So what used to be 4 or 5 people in the kitchen at a time was me doing the bread. So I was starting at 3:30, 4 in the morning, getting out just after midnight, 1 o'clock. I did this 27 days straight.
Jesus.
It was tough.
I'm surprised you're still alive, mate, to be honest.
Honestly, I say it was tough, and like to the point that my feet were bleeding. Like I was in a bad way, but I would not change anything about that, because that turned me into the chef that I am now. You know, I'm very much of like, if a job needs doing, just get it done. Like that's not my job or anything like that. It's very much like, if a dish is doing, I'll get in there. I don't mind. First 3 weeks here, you know, kitchen porters were a slight bit of an issue. As soon as it hit 6 o'clock, they're like, see you later. So I found myself doing the dishes most nights. And, you know, I think if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't have that mentality of just like, it needs to be done. Someone's got to do it. You might say it's not your job. It's not my job. But I'm still going to do it because it's a job I need to do it.
Yeah.
And that very much taught me that. And, you know, Andre seen me in a bad way. And he did look after me. Like when he seen me in a bad way, he was like, all right, you need to sort yourself out a little bit here. You know, bring me fresh socks and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, character building, I suppose, what I think they used to say it was. I think it was more character breaking down. but yeah, I know, it was fun. It was fun.
It does not sound like fun. No, <mate. I> don't.
At the time, you know, I'm still 20 years old. I've still got all my energy. I'm drinking 3 or 4 Red Bulls a day to try to stay awake. But again, just super fun. Loads of learning experiences. And just, you know, looking at it in a sense of, it's going to make me a better chef in the future. It's going to make me a stronger person, which it did, you know, now. at the time, not so much. But no, we, you know, it's all part of growing up.
Yeah. So you move on from there. Where do you move to?
I went back home to work at Lucknam Park. So I was at Lucknam Park for just under a year before I wanted to get back into London. So I went back to Lucknam as a junior Sue. It's just close to home and it helped me. It was a little bit of a slower environment. You know, it was, you know, the restaurant was closed Sunday night, Monday. So you had a little bit more time to, you know, prep and get ahead of things. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, we weren't doing 120 covers, which what we were doing at Clifton. You know, it was a little bit of a slower restaurant, but also it was back into a Michelin starred environment, which is where I felt a lot more comfortable. Like the food was refined, the food was elegant, and there was, you know, incredible ingredients around me again. And I started learning again about building dishes and, you know, working with some great chefs. Hal was amazing. As a chef who can run an organization like that, the guy is fantastic. Like the food he produces, but also the way that kitchen runs, it felt like being back at the Waterside because it was just so well organized and so everything was structured. Everything had a time, everything had a place. It felt better, you know, and it helped me sort of calm down, sort out my health problems, which was mainly asthma, but it got really bad. So a lot of it was just, that settled me down. I felt a lot better. And then it was like, right, I'm sorted now. It's time to go back to London and do it all over again.
yeah, you feel right. I'll have some more of that.
Yeah, exactly. So that was when I got the call from Jason to go to Social Eating House, which I ended up going there, ended up leaving Lucknam and then still trying to find the place that was right. So I gave my notice and everything else. And then went to see Social Eating House, not having anywhere to live. And Paul saying to me, do you want the job? They offered me sous chef. I said, no, give me junior sous, just so I can make sure I'm what you want and also make sure it's what I want. And he said, fine. He said, when can you start? I was like, give me one day to find somewhere to live. He's like, a day? I was like, yeah. I was like, I'll be here on Wednesday morning. And he's like, it's Monday evening now. So the next day, so driving around London, trying to find somewhere to live. Found somewhere, a little house share. I was like, brilliant. Managed to let me move in the next day. So I moved in on the Tuesday and went to work on the Wednesday. And Social Eating House was definitely a highlight of my career. I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. That restaurant was fun. The food was great. The team were fantastic. The chef, Paul, was huge part of my career. Huge. He's tattooed on my arm as well. I have a lot of tattoos of people and memories, I suppose. But Paul was tattooed on my arm on my last day. So yeah, that was an interesting sort of like going in there right at the beginning of December. It's a machine. Like it's only a 65, 70 seat restaurant. And we're doing 120 covers out of this tiny little underground basement kitchen that's like a box to the point you walk in a walk-in fridge, you've got a duck. You can't walk in there unless you're, I don't know, 5'1". You can't walk in there. You have to duck. So I don't know. I got back there. The busy services, the rush of the kitchen, the working from 7 a.m. till 1 o'clock in the morning again. I really felt like I was back home then, you know, in the Michelin star environment, pushing on every day from the minute you get in, you're running to the minute you leave. And I loved all of it. And, you know, I had a great relationship with the head chef, Dan, and Paul. So I quickly worked my way up the ranks to sous chef, then to senior sous. And that was, I think it was great. It was a lot of fun. And then, you know, once progression kind of stopped there, I couldn't really go any further. You know, Dan was still there as the head chef. Paul was there as obviously chef patron. I was going to move on from Jason, but Jason basically said he needs a, you know, senior sous / head chef in New York. Am I interested? He knew I always wanted to go to New York. So I don't know where he got that information from, but he knew I wanted to always live in New York. So he said to me, he's like, if you want to go to New York, like leave it with me, I'll sort it out. And, you know, Jason's a super busy man. I think to myself, like, yeah, all right, chef, I'll take that job. Like, that sounds great, thank you. But I don't think anything of it because I'm like, there's no way it's going to work. He's such a busy man. He says the right thing. I'm like, yeah, all right, great. Like, he's going to move me to New York. And 2 days later, he calls me up. He's like, right, your visa application's gone. I was like, shit. Wow. Like, I had no idea. And then literally 2.5 months later, I'm on the plane. And I was like, this is surreal. I was
moving
like,
to New York.
What is going on? Like, everything happened so fast. I called my mom. I'm like, by the way, I'm moving to New York. She's like, no, you're not. I'm like, no, I am. I am. Jason looked after me super well.
How did you know Jason? Or how did he know of you before?
I think my CB was on the Cater, I guess. They kind of approached me. He's just saying, I'm looking for a job. And at the time, I kind of wasn't. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was like, am I happy here? Do I want something a bit more fast-paced? I kind of did want to go back to London. And when they called me up about the job, it was like, this sounds cool. This sounds like a lot of fun. And obviously, I knew about Jason. I went to eat at Maze when he was running that. So I thought, you know, this. I ate at Pollen Tree while I was at Clifton. So let's just go for it. And, you know, it'll be fun. And he did. He found me somewhere to stay in New York. You know, every time he came out to New York, took me to all the different places he knew to go and eat in New York. So it was great. Like, really strong experience, and kind of like with him looking after me and making sure that sort of like anything I needed, he was kind of always on the other end of the phone. I got in a lot of trouble when I first got out there. Kind of very different working environment from London. I'm used to work at Socially In-House, and that's, you know, very full-on environment. And Jason sat me down the week before I left and went, I know how you are in the kitchen here now. He's like, when you go out there, be different. And I was like, okay. He's like, be better. He's like, you're a very... And I did. I turned into a very aggressive, very uptight, kind of like just very driven and focused on what I was trying to do. And I kind of, you know, become an asshole basically. And Jason just said, like, that doesn't fly out in New York. You can't go out there and you can't be aggressive. You got to be a lot nicer. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I will. And kind of went out there and it's exactly the same. Guy overcooks a coat of buff. I went nuts. Gave him a hard time. He went straight to HR. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Big old drama, Jason on the phone. What have you done? Like, they're threatening to send you home. Like, what?
The ball unions and stuff over there. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Incredible.
He should have just given you a copy of Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That's what you needed to go to cook in New York.
It was insane to go there and to think, like, some of the things that would happen in London that you wouldn't bat an eyelid at because it's normal. At the time, obviously, things have changed now, but at the time, it was like, that's just how the kitchen was. And then... going out to New York, like, people only work their shift. So we have an AM team and a PM team at 4 o'clock or 3:30 it was, sorry. The AM team finish. Whether they're done doing what they're doing or not, they stop what they're doing and they go. And I kind of was completely blown away. And we're in the middle of service. Guy's got 2 ribeyes on the grill, 3:30 hits. And I'm like, hey, has anybody seen him? And he's like, yeah, he's gone. I'm like, what? It's 3:30. 3:30, he's still got food on the grill. We're not even sitting at the table, but he's gone. And you get in line, I talked to my exec chef at the time, which is Danilla, and he said to me, he's like, it's just how it is, Chris. And he changed my mentality with very much being this very aggressive, full on. And I think if I hadn't met Dan in New York, I probably still would have been the same person, or I would have been sent home. But he was super calm, really, really cool, calm demeanor about him, and nothing fazed him in the kitchen. In a Michelin star environment, 200 covers, nothing fazed him.
Was it just his demeanor that kind of changed your attitude, or did he have any like practical advice for you?
He sat me down a lot. He sat me down a lot and just said, look, be better. It was very much just kind of like, you can't, he'd worked in all those restaurants. He worked for Gordon Ramsay. He worked for Jason in London. So he knew exactly where I was coming from and he understood it, but he taught me very much about these people are here to do a job. A lot of them are here for a paycheck. Some of them are here because they really care about what they're doing. But get to know each of them on a sort of a little bit more of a personal level so you understand if people are going through stuff. And for me, I was like, never really thought about that. Like, you come in, you do your job, you go home. Like, you work here, you don't work here. And you kind of gain the respect out of your team by kind of generally giving a shit about what they're doing. And you know, did you have good days off? All that sort of stuff. And just when something goes wrong in the kitchen, just kind of, if it's something you can't fix, like say someone's overcooked a piece of meat, there's no point getting upset, just get another one on. Get another one on, because we can get upset about it and it's not going to speed up the cooking time. Let's just get another one on, move forward and then learn about it after. And he taught me that a lot because, like I said, I flipped my lid before, but working with him, very calm. And when I came back, I was very, very different. You know, walking back into a London kitchen again, which is very much full on, and I was very different.
You think Jason sort of had a plan for you in that sense?
I think so, a little bit, yeah. I think Pollen Street changed a lot.
Did you go to Pollen Street as head chef?
So I started as senior sous,
yeah,
and then I went to head chef. Never really got the contract for it, but was always introduced as a head chef. I was kind of waiting for the contract. I was introduced as a head chef, you know, when I was working there. And it was very different. You know, you get back in there and you've seen the sort of like, you're back in that real full-on intense environment. And it's like, and you could see people were struggling. So it's very much about like, I think in that sense, we had kind of good cop, bad cop kind of relationship. Mm. I'm very much just like, they'll get their earful from one side, and then you got to try and make that person still want to stay. So it's very much like, right, okay, like, we made a mistake. How do we do it? What do we learn from? How do we go forward? You know, we kind of changed it a little bit like that. And from New York, that's definitely helped. Because now I look at my kitchen, for example, we've been here 8 months. My staff turnover is 0%. I've not lost anybody.
Wow.
I've not lost anybody. Everybody comes back. I can come upstairs and do this with you guys. I don't have to worry about it because I know that they're not going to send anything that's not right. So that's part of, I think, the learning curve of how I became a little bit more like I am now, as opposed to what I used to be like. Yeah.
When you first started in your career, did you ever believe that going to New York and cooking would be achievable? Like,
oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It was what I was going
to
do.
I don't think it's something we sell enough to like young chefs looking to get into hospitality and stuff, you know, even young front of house or anything, that you, this job can take you all over the world. We've had chefs, 100%. Loads of chefs on, they've told us they've been in Qatar and, you know, mad stuff, lots of, been to New York and done awesome stuff. And I think it's something we should really sell through the colleges and stuff. So like, this career will get you anywhere you'd like to be. Mm,
travel the world.
It's brilliant. You hear so much about the negatives of the chef career. Like, fucking hell, this is a brilliant job. It's exciting. You can go everywhere.
It really can take you anywhere you want to go. Anywhere you want to go. And I think I always knew I was going to go to New York anyway. But I agree with you. You know, I tell a lot of my young guys, obviously D&D are a big company. They have restaurants in New York. They have, you know, they have the opportunity to send people everywhere. And the same thing with Jason. Like, just before I started with D&D, Jason calls me up, asked me if I want to go open his restaurant for him in Saudi. You know, so there's like, you know, then potentially go to Dubai and all these places. Like, there were so many opportunities working for Chef Jason. And like, that was kind of a selling point when I brought people on at Pollen Street and I interviewed people. I was like, hey, like, you know, you come in here, you do a year here. You want to then go to New York? You want to go to Dubai? You want to go there? It's like, we can make it happen. And Chef would make it happen. If they really were hard set at doing it, they come and do a year at Pollen Street and they work super hard, Chef Jason will send you anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, Pollen Street's one of them. If you put it on your CV, everyone knows. Like,
yeah.
We know lots of restaurants that you've spoke about because we're just mad for this kind of thing. But even if you go up to a normal person as a slight knowledge of food, Pollen Street's one of them restaurants where they go, I know that, you know.
It's turning into a restaurant. It's turning into an institutionalized restaurant, I think, as well, that people know. You know, Chef's a big name and he's done great things for the industry. And I couldn't thank him enough for everything he's done for me for my career. I definitely wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for him. And if I had the choice and I had the opportunity and he says to me in 5 years time, come back and work for me again, he's the one chef I would definitely go and work for again, just because of how he conducts his business. And like, yeah, he's a fantastic chef, but he's an incredible businessman. If I could ask anybody advice for opening a restaurant, that's the person I'm going to go to. Like, how did you do it? Because I know he went through hell to open Pollen Street. And you look at him now, like, he's all over the world. Everybody knows him. He's, you know, it's just, he looks 20 years younger than he did when he was working at Maze. You know, he looks incredible. He looks younger than I do now. So it's just, you know, he's kind of the sort of chef I want to be. Look up to him and kind of like, yeah, in 10 years time, I want him calling me saying, can you come work for me? It'll never happen. and he would never approach me for that. But no, definitely a big part of the industry is it. There's no limits in this industry anymore. Like, there's nothing you can't do and go on to from here. I say that to all my young guys. All my young guys are in there now. I'll put them in for all the competitions they want to go in for. I'll help them with it all. And then once they want to move on, like, work hard for me, I'll put in any call I can of any favor of anybody, any connection I have. I want to help them, you know, like, I want all my chefs to be far better chefs than I am. That's super important. You know, they're here to learn from me, but ultimately I want them to go on to be a lot better than I am. And at their age, I want them to be better than I was at their age. You know, I make it sound like I'm an old man, but I feel like an old man.
Obviously, things ended well with you and Jason, and you talk very respectfully about him. Why did you leave?
It was time. Six years, it was time.
Yeah. Just because you wanted to see something different.
I think so. It's time to kind of try and put my stamp somewhere in the industry. And, you know, I left on from there. I went to open the Randolph Hotel. I always said after working in Clifton and stuff, I'd never work in a hotel again. Mm. And I end up,
it's a different animal, isn't it? Hotels. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Hotels are, unless you're a restaurant within a hotel, if you end up becoming a hotel restaurant, it's not the same. It's not the same. And
you've got everything, banqueting, breakfast.
So yeah, the Randolph. So when we opened that, we had 68 cover dining room, 2 PDRs, banquet hall, 2 afternoon tea rooms. Sorry, it was 3 PDRs and 1 upstairs. Yeah, it was, and a chef's table. We had everything. Jeez. And it was the biggest operation I think I've ever seen. And kind of like, it started out as when they sold me the job, it's like, yeah, you're just going to be mainly focused on the restaurant. That 68 covers, that's all you're going to do. We want a star. We want all of these. I was like, all right, great. And then when I got there, that was not what they wanted. That was the opposite of what they wanted. They wanted 150 covers. They wanted 300 covers for breakfast, a banquet hall going on all at the same time for 300 Jesus. People, drinks receptions here, canapé events over there, 180 for afternoon tea. And it was just like, and you know what? I'm grateful for the fact that the restaurant took off and we were busy, definitely too busy, you know, commuting to Oxford back to London every day. It was busy, busy. And, you know, I'm starting at 6 a.m. helping with breakfast. Then we go on to do lunch. Then we go on to do afternoon tea. Then we go on to do dinner. Then we got to make sure we got the overnight menu. So like, there's just food nonstop coming out of that kitchen. But kind of when I seen they wanted to go down the sort of more casual route, you know, I had to turn it into more of a brasserie as opposed to a fine dining restaurant. We changed it and we noticed the covers drop off massively. And then that was just alarm bells for me. Time to get out. Just, you know, it's not what I'm trained my entire career to do. So it's not what I'm going to stick by doing now. I'm going to go and do something I want.
If I apply to that, because I don't want to get personal, but I'm guessing the money was pretty decent. You could have just done easy brasserie food, took home good money. And
I think, I wish if the money was better, potentially.
You might have considered it.
But it definitely.
Nah, I can tell. I mean, I've only met you today, but you've got that passion. There's no way you would.
Yeah, money isn't a thing for me. No. You know, as long as I've got enough money to pay my mortgage and I've got enough money to, you know, put food on the table, I don't live a luxurious lifestyle. My boys will find it hilarious. They, you know, I don't wear designer clothes. I buy shirts from Amazon. Like, it's just not how I am. You know, when I moved to New York, I moved with everything that I owned. I had one suitcase and it was 3 kilos under my allowance. And that was everything. Wow. That was all my clothes that I owned. Like, I'm just not that sort of person. And so like materialistic and money for me is just like, as long as when I want, I can take my fiance out for dinner. She's happy. I'm cool. Like, it's fine for me. So like money's not a drive thing for me. But if I'm not cooking what I want to be cooking, then I'm not going to stick around.
No, you've got to be happy in what you're doing, aren't you?
Yeah. No. It's, the industry's driven on passion. And as soon as I didn't love what I was doing at that restaurant, it was time to go. So,
other than the obvious reasons of Birmingham being an awesome place, what took you to Birmingham?
D&D begging. You know what? I still live in London.
What?
I don't commute every day. D&D have been nice enough to sort me out somewhere to stay.
Yeah.
But I'm not planning to move to Birmingham. Just because
I'm editing this out, definitely.
Just because I've just bought a house in London. That's the only reason. Otherwise, we were packed up and we would have been here. But yeah, it's the food scene has definitely changed in Birmingham. Mm. I think I came here once when I was 17 for a competition at a college, Young Chef of the Year. And it wasn't really a great deal going on there. But now you see all these restaurants popping up here and there. And, you know, you've got the Michelin star restaurants in Birmingham that are great. You know, like Purnell's, I went to eat there just last week. And, you know, that restaurant's had a star for 15 years, I think it is.
Yeah.
I hope I get that right and he doesn't listen to this. And
it's been a good while. Yeah.
And the food there was fantastic. It was so worthy of its star. Quirky little restaurant, but like the food was knockout. He came to eat here. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go and check out there. And, you know, you look around and you just see all these restaurants now popping up here and there in Birmingham. It's kind of like, okay, it's turning into quite a foodie destination.
Yeah, even for us, it's hard to keep up with all the openings, to be honest.
Yeah.
What do people say about outside Birmingham?
Say about Birmingham outside of Birmingham?
Yeah, like the food, particularly the food.
I think a lot of the industry is saying the same. I think a lot of the industry is saying that Birmingham is really sparking up some really fantastic chefs, some really great food. And there's a lot of people, definitely, like, we find a lot of people travel from London to come and check out the restaurant here, maybe again because it's in OD&D London. But no, it's definitely, you see a lot of chefs coming here to open new sites. And like you said, there's so many places opening at the moment. I just think there's so much diversity here. So it's almost turning into a slightly smaller London, I suppose. Mm. You know, the food scene in London is still massive, but it won't be long, I don't think, before Birmingham's up there with it. So it's, you know, it's exciting times.
Sorry, were you working for D&D before or?
No. So I was still at the Randolph Hotel, and then I was supposed to work for D&D just before lockdown. We were supposed to be opening a restaurant in LA, and obviously COVID hit, so it kind of just stumped that. And
gets it.
Yeah. The visa literally got approved 2 days before the US closed her border, and that's a good thing because otherwise I would have had no job.
LA was a weird place during COVID as well.
So I heard.
Yeah.
But I wasn't actually going to go straight to LA. I was supposed to go straight to New York, help with their new restaurant in New York until LA was ready. And then again, kind of COVID hit and everything kind of settled down. I think they kind of said, well, we're just going to hold off on the LA site. So I ended up staying with Jason for probably another year. And throughout all of COVID, you know, we were doing that at home hampers, which was great. And then, they were talking about this place. They had a few chefs in mind and they kept calling me. And I kept saying, it's Birmingham. I'm not going to move to Birmingham. I can't commute every day. Mm. Like, it's 120 odd miles. I can't do there and back every day. So, no, I'm not going to do it. And they kept calling and they kept calling. I got Carol calling, Duncan calling, then David calling. They're like, just go and see the site. So I was like, all right. Like, they're like, we'll get you a train. We'll send you up there. All right, cool. So they got us a train up here, me and my partner. And I walked into the room out there. And at the time, it was a building site. And as soon as I walked in there, I was like, yeah, all right, when do you want me to start? Yeah. Just because I thought this place was so much potential. I seen all the plans and everything, but I think kind of seeing the space and standing in the actual space, I was like, all right, this could be really cool.
Yeah, it's stunning, isn't it? It really is.
They've done an incredible job. It's a massive beast, but like, you walk out there, it's got to be one of the most beautiful restaurants in Birmingham.
Well, I genuinely, maybe not the view's not as the same, but I very much liken it to the New York bar in Tokyo, which is an incredible bar and it blows you away. And I had the very same vibe coming through that elevator, coming out, seeing the view. It just felt very similar.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I don't know. I seen it in the daytime and I was sold. And I came up here in the nighttime. First time I came, still a building site. D&D don't know this. So I kind of snuck in, came upstairs, passed all the security, how I got out, I don't know. Just to see what it was like at nighttime. And I was just like, I must have sat in the restaurant for about an hour on the floor because there were no seats. So it was nothing in there. It was just a concrete floor. And I was just sat there just looking at it. I thought, you know what, this is, imagine eating dinner here, eating great food, having a tasting menu, overseeing all of this, you know, and you get start thinking about like New Year's Eve and all that. So New Year's Eve up here, guys, was amazing.
Yeah, but
everybody, we came up literally just before midnight, brought the whole team up, and guests come over to me, where do you think the fireworks are going to be? I have no idea. It turns out everywhere.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Everywhere. Every direction you looked, it was there. So it was, you know, the restaurant's just, we've got the most incredible site. You know, Birmingham's cool. I'm enjoying it now. So, you know, we're having a good time.
How did you go about developing the menu? Did you have free rein or?
There were certain parameters that I was given. And I think I just didn't listen to that at all. I think I just kind of did what I wanted to do. But I did base it on very much if it was going to be a 70-cover restaurant and it's 70 covers, that's it. I was wrong, definitely wrong. So when we got here and we were doing the food that we were doing right at the beginning, I was like, okay, this is great. This is cool. And then obviously the covers started to pick up and the restaurant's demand became so much higher, which I'm not knocking at all. I love the fact that we have 160 people want to come here every Saturday night. And, you know, we have a wait list of, you know, 50 people for the same night wanting to come. So like, I cannot fault that at all. And that's brilliant. It's a lot busier than I anticipated. So I've had to then develop the food and kind of put a slight turn onto what we do. So we can execute it beautifully still for 20 covers and equally as beautiful if we're doing 150 covers. So it's changed the development of the food a little bit, but again, it's still very much about just cooking great food, using brilliant ingredients, working with the best suppliers, local as much as we can, and just kind of build the menu around that. It's hyper seasonal, you know, have to use what's in, you know, what's around and what's in season at the time. So that kind of drives the menu. And we've now introduced the taster menu, which is more me. But, you know, if you're doing that in the middle of 160 covers and you've got 20 of them having taste in, it becomes very, very hectic downstairs. Yeah. And there's food leaving the kitchen left, right, and center that you got to try and keep an eye on. But definitely building it just around the trends that we see that are coming out and, you know, trying to compete with those restaurants in Birmingham. You know, the restaurants I want to compete with, I want to compete with the likes of Adams and Purnell's. And, you know, obviously this restaurant's a lot bigger in capacity, but I still want to compete with that sort of style of food. So, you know, we're working super hard to do that.
So the aim is Michelin?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I want a star. And if we were doing 80 covers, I feel like we'd have a lot better chance of achieving that. But, you know, when we're doing those incredibly big numbers, again, brilliant for us. It's great that the restaurant's got such a buzz about it and all that. But, you know, it does make it a little bit harder to super refine that food.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if we can do 160 covers and get a Michelin star, you'll just see me standing on the roof. I'll be so happy. and that's what all the guys are striving for as well. The guys and girls I got downstairs in the kitchen, they all want to do the same. And they're all here for a reason. You know, like we get the reviews and we're, you know, we're working super hard every day to try and achieve what we want to achieve. So, you know, hopefully, it's definitely not going to be this year, but hopefully next year, at least I want to get in the guide. I definitely want to get this restaurant in the guide. And I think it has every potential to get there. It's just, we just got to keep working at it. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite dish that's been on the menu or is on the menu?
Probably the white asparagus dish is in at the moment.
I should have had that.
White asparagus came in season really early this year. And as soon as I seen that it came in season, I jumped on it straight away.
There's some wild garlic out now.
Like, wild garlic's really just came
early?
In.
I feel like everything's so early expensive. This year.
Is it?
Yeah, so I want to put wild garlic on the lamb dish and I'm just waiting for it to come down in price just a touch.
All right, please, anyway, you get a load.
yeah, I think it would go great on the lamb dish. It's just it's astronomically expensive at the moment. But I think, yeah, probably the white asparagus with trout roe, I think is probably my favorite at the moment. Just using great white asparagus. Very, very simple dish. Like, there's not much going on. It's very much about the cooking liquor that we use for the asparagus with the pink peppercorns. It's nicely spiced and, you know, loads of acidity. We use calamansi gel on there as well that gives a real punch. And then we finish with like a super buttery smoked trout roe burbank, which we make with burnt butter. And again, that just kind of like, you got your super earthy asparagus, super acidic calamansi, and then just buttery, fishy, delicious. Four or five things on the plate, but eating that dish, like,
that's my belly rumbling if you had that song. How was that rumbling? But, I knew I should have had that dish. We just had a fair representation of your style of cooking, yeah.
Yeah, that's just very much, like I say, three or four things on the plate, but everything's on there for a reason. It's got to complement each other. I'm not overly fussy with what goes on the plate. It's very much about, like, if it works for everyone on the plate, the flavors go together. The flavors are big and bold. Like, that's really, really important. You know, if you've got three or four subtle ingredients on the plate, okay, it's there, but it's got to be, each flavor has to really let you know it's there on the plate. And that's kind of where my style of cooking is coming from. It's, you know, pairing those ingredients together to really deliver, you know, a punch at the end.
Awesome. Did you have anything you wanted to bring up or talk about or why you got us here?
I don't know. I mean, you guys, I'd like to know where you guys would recommend me to go and eat now. In Birmingham.
Tell you where we're going now.
Bonehead. Bonehead.
You know what? One of my guys was telling me about it.
It's the best restaurant in the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's that good.
It's everything there is really dark. They're playing loud rock music and they're doing the best fried chicken you've ever had. I guarantee it.
And where is this? Because I know I want fried chicken.
It's just down there.
Behind the casino.
You're joking.
It's just about nearly seen.
Just outside the restaurant.
Yeah, I didn't even know about it.
Just by where the Brew Dog is. If you come out of there, it's just around the back of that casino.
Yeah, right. That's the place. Meat Shack burgers can't beat Meat Shack.
Oh, loads! We're big fans.
670. You've been 670.
Honestly, like I said, I ate at Adams and Purnell's and Asher. I've had no time off, but nice. Like,
I know. 670 grams is one of my favorite places.
Yeah, you would enjoy
really
that.
Really good.
Le Petit Bois in Moseley. If you get to come out of Birmingham a bit, go and see the suburbs. Go see Moseley.
Oh, this mate, we can see this is another podcast.
Yeah,
but you guys got me on Instagram. Eat Vietnam, so you just keep sending me loads of places to go and eat.
Yeah, I can get your list.
Definitely.
Everywhere I want to go and eat. Like, I've been around London. Yeah, I've seen London. I've ate at some of the best restaurants in London. And I've had loads of fun doing it. But now, like, oh, when I get an evening where I can go and try something different, I want to go and sort of see what Birmingham's all about.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's, like I say, it's definitely up and coming. So I just want to be a part of that. So,
yeah, cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, mate, thanks for giving us a lot of time. Just before we finish, Carl likes to do a few quick questions, just a bit of fun, lighthearted way to finish the podcast. Yeah. Not really about what we've been talking about, just
it's nonsense, but it's nonsense.
Oh, let's do it.
Which favourite movie?
Hot Fuzz.
What a good film.
Slash Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Shaun of the Dead, I think probably the all time, but Hot Fuzz because it got me and my missus together.
I didn't really like Journey. Is it World's End or Journey?
World's End, yeah, let's not talk about
that. Yeah, I don't know what happened with that one. Your favourite band?
AC/DC.
Oh, these are good answers, yeah, man. I'm liking this one. Do you have a cookbook you'd recommend to anyone?
Pollen Street. Hands down.
You get royalties from it.
best cookbook in the world.
Do you have a favourite big fast food chain?
Probably McDonald's.
What'd you order?
Two double cheeseburgers and a McFlurry. Yeah, nice. Simple.
What's your favourite dish you cook at home?
Sweet and sour chicken.
Nice. And what's your favourite food destination in the world, other than Birmingham, obviously?
New York.
Yeah, that's come up a lot as well. I think most people that have been there have come out and said New York.
Yeah, New York.
I like that question. Are you going to do that question? Comrade told us about it. I like that question. Quickly do this question that Comrade asked. It's a good one for like if you've got food is about. So what was it? Pig.
You have to give up one.
Pig, sheep, cow, chicken. Which one are you getting rid of?
Oh, no.
I
vegetables.
took me days to come up with the answer.
I still don't really have an answer.
So this isn't like a quick question.
Yeah, this one's you got to really think about.
Yeah.
No.
You always think of something, don't ask
the
problem.
Yeah, like it's there and you think, yeah, that'll do. No.
And then you think, no, what about that?
I was going to say chicken, but then I thought fried chicken.
Fried chicken, yeah. Versatile. No. But yeah, no, I'm going to say chicken.
Chicken.
And then I'll change my mind later and I'm going to call you and be like, take that bit out.
Yeah, it's lamb now.
I did go with chicken on the basis that Cray 670, he does fried chicken, but it's quail.
Oh, see, you can get away with it. There's plenty of other birds. Can't get many other sheep.
Definitely.
Yeah, all right.
Chris, this has been awesome, mate. Really appreciate you giving up all your time. I know how busy you are, mate. So this has been really great.
No, thank you, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
awesome. Thanks for listening to the story.
Ah, it's class. I loved it. Thanks, mate.
No, thank you. Thank you so
much. Cheers, dude.